Have a big group to have special songs or anointing and all of that. I just want to challenge us. It takes effort. It takes a willingness and a determination to be prepared, whether we're have a message or a Bible study or a special song. All of those things takes a willingness to say, Lord, what would you have me to do? And I just want to challenge us all to be open to that, be willing to exercise. So I'm thinking this morning, I'd like to, for you to follow along in my thought process a little bit. Have you ever had a visitor come that to your house? I've told this before, but I had a man come to my house one time, and I won't tell the whole story, but I will just tell you that I wasn't expecting him. In fact, at first, my wife was the one that discerned there was somebody that had could be coming up to the door, and I didn't really believe her because I didn't see the evidence, and I went outside looking around, and I didn't see anyone, and I come back in our back door of our house, and she just insisted that there was some evidence down by the mailbox that the person that had come was somebody was in the vicinity. So I went to the door, and when I looked out the little window in my door, there was a man standing there looking right back in at me. And so it was a little bit distressing, I guess you would say. So I opened the door, and when I opened the door, he stepped in. It wasn't like I didn't have a chance to say, hello, what can I do for you, or anything. When I cracked the door, he just put his foot in, and he just come in. Well, I immediately went into preservation mode, and I told him, I said, you sit down. And there wasn't nothing to sit on but an old round-top trunk, and I made him sit on that trunk, and I was watching him really close. And I had my wife and my children there, and I did not want anything bad to happen. And anyway, I'll just stop right there. Now, how do you respond when there is a welcome visitor to your house? This, it may be you are sitting looking out the window, or maybe you stand and look out the window or the door, and when they finally come in the driveway and finally pull up to your house, and you're wanting them to get out of the car, and maybe you go out of the house, and what do you say? Welcome. Come in. Can I take your coat? Or maybe can I take your hat? Would you like a drink? Would you like something cold to drink or something hot to drink? Or if it's even anywhere close to mealtime, and some of y'all come from families that it don't matter what time it is, can I give you something to eat? Some of y'all probably have grandparents or great-grandparents that's just the thing they do. You come to their house and they want to feed you something. I know families like that. I've been around them, and it's just that's how they make you feel welcome to their house. And maybe if they're going to spend the night, or you're hoping they'll spend the night, you say, can I help you bring something in? Can I carry something for you? Maybe you make sure that there's a comfortable seat. Give them the best seat in the house. come, we've got good chairs to sit in. Come sit down and tell us about your trip. Oh, it's so good to see you. And we do all of these things. It's probably from household to household. There's a little bit of a variation, but I doubt very seriously that any of us would tell someone that we're anticipating and welcoming to our house when they come in the door. I doubt very seriously we would say, sit down, like I did that man. I didn't know this person. I never seen him before, and he was imposing himself on me. I didn't know if he had ill intent or what it was, but I did not treat him like I would one of y'all. It's not because I couldn't have treated him nice. He didn't give me the opportunity. His actions, his presence was threatening to me. And that's why I took the position that I did. You know, if we were wealthy, we might even say to a household employee or servant or whoever it was, we might say, I'll get someone to carry in your things and give me your keys and I'll have him park your car in the garage and we'll see that everything is taken care of if we were wealthy. Well, I'm thinking about this morning how it was in Jesus' time. You know, they weren't, it's kind of like we are, not very many of us are wealthy. I don't know very many wealthy people, and I personally don't know anybody that has household employees that are there to be the butler or the cook or... Well, I just don't know anybody. There are people that have that kind of lifestyle and have that kind of means, but I'm not acquainted with them. You come to my house, I'm going to be the one that offers to help carry in your suitcase. I'm going to be the one that says, park your car over there. I'll help you carry your stuff in. Let me take your coat. I'll be the one that does that kind of thing. And in Jesus' time, the vast majority of the people were like we are. They didn't have servants. But I'd like for us to kind of get a little picture of how they welcomed people to their house. Let's turn to Genesis, the 18th chapter. And this is before Jesus' time, obviously. But I just want to get us a picture of how far back some of these customs go. If we go back here to 18th chapter of Genesis, and the 4th verse is what we'll read down to. Beginning in verse 1, it says, "And the Lord appeared unto him in the plains of Mamre." We're talking about Abraham here. "And he sat in the tent door in the heat of the day. And he lifted up his eyes and looked, and lo, 3 men stood by him. And when he saw them, he ran to meet them from the tent door and bowed himself toward the ground." Have you ever noticed how interested you are in company when nobody's come to your house in a long time? You know, if you haven't had anyone to come visit you in months, and someone drives in and you hear the gravel crunching in the driveway, and you, that's brother so-and-so. I didn't even know he was coming by. And what do? You go out there and welcome them in. You're glad to see and glad to see them. And here Abraham was sitting in the door of his tent in the heat of the day. And I don't know what you do in the heat of the day, but more than likely Abraham was like I am. He probably had a long day's work, and he was up in years. He was probably sleepy, and he was probably kind of drowsy in the tent door. And as he looked out, What do you know? There's three men out there. And when he saw them, he ran to meet them from the tent door, bowed himself toward the ground and said, My Lord, if now I have found favor in thy sight, pass not away, I pray thee, from thy servant. Don't go on any farther. I haven't had any company in a long time. And then he said, Let a little water, I pray you, be fetched, and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree. It was a custom they had. Wash your feet. Well, here, let's get a little water for you. You can rinse the dirt off your feet and have a seat. Pull up here under the shade tree and let's get acquainted. Maybe there was a component of recognition here. I don't know. But he had a desire to be welcoming to them. If they were coming to our house, there would be a custom that we would fall to. Maybe your background says you're going to serve them something to eat. Maybe you'd say, I'll help you carry in your things. Whatever that might be, this is what they did. It was very customary and it was very appropriate for their lifestyle. I'd like to read something I found to you. It says, similar to the Old Testament, foot washing was almost exclusively the duty of slaves or servants. Not only do servants draw the water, wash the feet, and dispose of the water, but it appears that a slave could not refuse to render this service, no matter how old he or she might be. There's someone quoted here as saying, foot washing could be used as a synonym for slavery. To wash another's feet symbolized subjection of one person to another. Those who received foot washing from another were social superiors of those who performed the task. In short, foot washing was widespread in Greco-Roman culture with varied meanings. So this is written about the time of a time period of history when Jesus was here. Greco-Roman culture is loosely described as somewhere around 300 or 400 BC to 300 or 400 AD. All right? That's kind of a loose definition of when that time period of history was. Jesus came during that time. And this writer says that washing another person's feet was synonymous with slavery. This is not a religious thing. This is a secular thing. What I mean by secular is it had to do with everyday life. You understand what I'm saying there? That was a religion or anything like that. It was just that it was a culture. It's the way society operated at that time. If a person washed another person's foot, it was a sign of slavery. It was synonymous with that. It was an indication of subjection of one person to another. That's the way it was. And so it wasn't uncommon for someone to come into a home and to, at the minimum, be offered water to wash their own feet. Because of our culture and because of our mode of dress, the most pertinent thing we do with our feet would be to take our shoes off when we come in the house. It's our walking surfaces and our shoes that we wear and all of that is not necessarily conducive to our feet just getting dusty all the time. And it was. The climate, how they dressed, and all of that was, that's the way it was. So I just wanted us to get a little picture here of the setting that Jesus was in. We know that Abraham offered to provide water for his guests to wash their feet, to get the dust of traveling off of them. Yesterday we had dust here, and it really looked pretty dusty and dirty, and in a short period of time, several pitched in, and it looks very respectable today. Dust was picked up and swept up and cleaned up. So I'd like for us now to turn to Ephesians, the fifth chapter, and I want us to begin to talk today about the ordinance of foot washing. I'd like to go to Ephesians, the fifth chapter, and I just want us to, let me say this about my purpose, is that it means something to me to see understanding and acceptance and something witnessed to other people. When I see realization and understanding dawn on another person's understanding, it's something that makes me feel like, I don't know, it's an emotional reward for me. When I can show someone in my occupation something that can help them in their trade, and I see that they really get it, it clicks, it means something. So I would like, with the help of the Lord, I'm asking God to help us today, desire and interest in your prayers. I want this to not be something that you feel like is a requirement of man. All right? I want us to have an understanding that supersedes man is telling me I got to do this. All right? If a man is telling me what to, I'm following some kind of legislation, it doesn't really, you know, I stop at red stoplights, and most of the time I do. There's times that I don't. And the times that I don't is not because I don't do it on purpose, but I don't see any cross traffic, and there's been times I've just drove right through a red light. And, when I stop because I know that's what legislation tells me to do, is stop at a red light. But when there's nobody coming, what good did it do? I don't get it. If I come to a stop, I've done this before. You can ask my wife later. I've come to a stop at the red light, and not because I'm trying to be rebellious, but I stopped. I did that, and nobody's coming. And I just took off and left. It wasn't because I felt this urge that I got to wait till it turns green. Now, some of you, it may be that's the way you operate. But to me, it's like I got to constantly think that light means I got to say stop. You know, it's got to turn green before I can go again. And I want washing one another's feet. I want it to be something that it's not like, okay, they're looking at me. They're going to see if I'm going to do this or not. No, I want it to be more than that, okay? So I've tried to set the stage for us to understand two things so far. One is that because of their climate and their culture and their mode of dress, it was a common thing to wash feet. The other thing is that to wash someone else's feet was an indication of one person being in subjection to another person, and it was a it was a statement of this person being of a higher social standing than the one doing the washing. Okay? That's the two things I want us to get so far. So I want to just write this on the board. Washing feet. You know, there's people, because it's like that red light, that they don't really understand why they got to stop. There's people that avoid it in our midst. Now, I'm not talking about here today, but amongst us as a body of people. And maybe justly so. Maybe they haven't ever really understand the concept. I hope y'all don't go away here feeling like I'm a rebellious driver. I really try not to be. But when I come to intersections, especially if my mind, if I'm thinking about something else or I'm in conversation with someone else, many times I just do what seems to be right, not because what the sign says. All right, so bear with me on that one. Let's go to Ephesians, the fifth chapter, and I would like for us to take a notice of verse 21. Apostle Paul, writing to the church at Ephesus, and right in the midst of a lot of other sound counsel and advice, he gives this verse. He says in verse 21, let's go up to 19 starting, speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord, giving thanks always for all things unto God and the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of the Lord. Now, I believe we're just kind of got in the middle here. If we go back to the first verse of this chapter, he says, be ye therefore followers of God as dear children. So he's talking to people that have come to a knowledge and an understanding of what it means to be saved. And as he's talking to them, he's giving, writing to them, he wants them to have a level of understanding that's more than just following legislation. He wants them to have this desire to be pleasing to God. He wants them to have it down in their heart. And one of the things he points out to them is submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. And it's one of the purposes and one of the things that is accomplished in washing feet, is it's an extension of our intentions. You catch those two words? It's the extension of our intentions. We can all have intentions, but until they become extended into our actions, many times it's only intentions. We could intend to retire at 40. But unless we extend that into some kind of action, it'll never happen. Didn't happen with me. And so we have to extend our intentions to submit to one another into some kind of action. You can say, well, I'm always intended to be in subjection one to another. I know that's what the Bible teaches, and that's my intention. Well, sometimes we have to make an opportunity to do that. You know, when we make an opportunity to do that by participating in washing one another's feet, we have extended our intentions of being in subjection. Because what was the culture? You know, The closest thing that I have ever witnessed in our culture in the United States is walking through a shopping mall and seeing somebody shine somebody else's shoes. I always thought that's something you're supposed to do yourself. I was a teenager or maybe a young adult before I ever saw somebody shining somebody else's shoes. I was always told you done that, you got your polish out and rubbed it on and buffed it off. We done that at the house. I didn't know there was folks that would do that in the shopping malls. We don't see people washing feet. We don't have this class thing of, well, he's a foot washer. He's a slave. He's a servant. He's in subjection. I'm above that. People wash my feet. You don't have those classifications around here in our nation. We have to make an opportunity sometimes. That's the point I want us to get right there. All right, I'd like to turn to Luke, the 7th chapter, and notice a story here. In Luke chapter 7, we have the setting where Jesus goes home with one of the Pharisees. Luke chapter 7 is rather lengthy. Jesus was, we have the setting here of the faith of the centurion in this chapter. And we'll read down, beginning verse 31 maybe. And the Lord said, whereunto then shall I liken the men of this generation, and to what are they like? They are like unto children sitting in the marketplace and calling one to another and saying, we have piped unto you and ye have not danced. We have mourned unto you and ye have not wept. For John the Baptist came needing neither eating bread nor drinking wine, and ye say, he hath a devil. The Son of Man is come eating and drinking, and you say, behold, a gluttonous man and a winebibber, a friend of publicans and sinners, but wisdom is justified of her children. And one of the Pharisees desired him that he would eat with him. So maybe this Pharisee, one of the members of a religious sect of that time, part of those that were, we would call it Judaism today. That would be their religion. He went and said, he reached out to Jesus. Maybe he had heard Jesus, that statement that Jesus had said. It's likely, I don't know that for a fact, but it's likely he heard that statement that Jesus just made about himself and about John the Baptist. And this Pharisee desired that he'd come and eat with him. And he went to the Pharisee's house and sat down to meet. You know, there's times that we are invited and maybe we're made aware of an opportunity to interact with someone that it might be a questionable friendship. All right? It's a questionable friendship for Jesus to go and eat and sit down with somebody that in other circumstances he had some pretty negative things to say about the Pharisees. But he went to his house, and he went and he sat down to meet. And I don't know what it was like for Jesus to sit down. I have these pictures in my mind that's other people have provided by artwork and things of that nature of people when they came to the table to eat. They were in kind of like this one-arm sofa thing where they kind of reclined and their feet was kind of sticking out. I think it would be kind of awkward to be at the table and eat like that, but I wasn't raised that way. So anyway, Jesus was sitting at the table, and apparently his feet were not under the table. Okay? Because we notice in the next verse, it says, and behold, a woman in the city, which was a sinner. When she saw that Jesus sat at meat in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster box of ointment, and stood at his feet, behind him weeping, and began to wash his feet with tears, and did wipe them with the hairs of her head, and kissed his feet, and anointed them with the ointment. So I want us to stop and think about what we know already about the culture that was in practice while Jesus was here, the Greco-Roman culture. What we know was customary for her to come in. It says she was a sinner. The Pharisee goes on, we'll read this. The Pharisee goes on and he knows she's a sinner. And if he knew she was a sinner, I know Jesus did. And she came into this Pharisee's house. I don't know what the arrangements were. I don't know why she came in. I don't know if the Pharisee was a hypocrite. And she came in because she'd been there before for sinful reasons. I don't know any of that. I just know that somehow she gained entrance. She came. She didn't come and try to impose on what was going on at the meal. But she had a deep spiritual need. She was tired of being in the sin business. Would you agree with that? And she came in, and she was so moved that she came and in tears. I can picture in my mind her kneeling down at Jesus' feet and with tears streaming down, making his feet wet with her tears. By her coming down and then wiping, she probably seen the tears on his feet, and she took her hair and wiped the tears off, which consequently wiped off the dust of his travels off of his feet, and she opened the ointment up and she poured that out. And I don't know that she was audibly, vocally wailing or anything like that. It just says that she wept here. It says, was a sinner. When she knew that Jesus sat at meat in the Pharisee's house, she brought an alabaster box of ointment. She stood at his feet behind him weeping and began to wash his feet with tears, and did wipe them with the hairs of her head, and kissed his feet, and anointed them with the ointment. And when the Pharisee which had bidden him saw it, he spake within himself, saying, this man, if he were a prophet, would have known who and what manner of woman this is that toucheth him, for she is a sinner. And Jesus answering said unto him, Simon, I have something somewhat to say to thee. And he saith, Master, say on. And there was, I'm not going to read the account here, but what we know about this situation, let's read in verse 44. It says, and he turned to the woman and said unto Simon, seest thou this woman? I entered into thine house, and thou gavest me not water for my feet, but she hath washed my feet with her tears, and wiped them with the hairs of her head. Thou gavest me no kiss, but this woman, since the time I came in, hath not ceased to kiss my feet. My head with oil thou didst not anoint, but this woman hath anointed my feet with ointment. Wherefore I say unto thee, her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loveth much, loved much. But to whom little is forgiven, the same little, same loveth little. And he said unto her, thy sins are forgiven. And the 50th verse said unto the woman, thy faith has saved thee. Go in peace. So she came in because she came to his feet and washed his feet with her tears and dried his feet with her hair and anointed them. anointed them with this ointment, she immediately put herself in what kind of position? In subjection. In submission. She elevated and esteemed him at a higher level than she did herself. She came in there, weighted down with sins. Have you ever saw someone that lived a sinful life that long term found it fulfilling? They all got heartaches, folks. If you're ever tempted to go down that path, remember, it doesn't bring long... There's excitement along the way, and there's thrills to be experienced, but long term, it does not bring contentment and happiness. This woman was weighted down. Jesus said her sins were many. And she came in there weighted down. She was weeping. Where else could she turn? Would the Pharisees talk to her? Probably not. Could she find any place for justification, for being able to lift her head up again? She couldn't. But she came to Jesus and she submitted herself at his feet. And he was able, because of who he is, to be able to say, "Thy sins be forgiven thee. Thy faith has saved thee." You know, she went from there a different person. There was a real transformation that happened there at the feet of Jesus. We sing about at the feet of Jesus, don't we? So I want us to take this thought a little further. Why didn't the Pharisee offer Jesus some water? He wouldn't even have had to wash Jesus' feet himself. But it was customary. You come into my house, here's some water. Would you like to wash your feet? You know, somebody come to your house, you probably won't say, "Brother Danny, you want to wash your feet?" I'd probably say, well, I took a shower this morning, or, I think they're okay. You probably won't say that to me, but more than likely you'll say, "Would you like a glass of water? We've got something cold to drink in the refrigerator. Would you like a drink?" You'll probably say that to me. And it was just as customary for the people that came to his house for a meal. It was very customary for the Pharisees to wash their hands and feet. They did it a lot. They even imposed it on us. What did they say about the disciples eating without washing their hands? They found fault with that, didn't they? And this Pharisee invited Jesus in, and Jesus points out the fact that the Pharisee didn't even offer him a pan of water to wash his feet in. Did the Pharisee feel like he was superior to Jesus? I don't know. The Pharisee had plainly invited Jesus, but he didn't follow through with the commonly accepted hospitality of the age that he lived in. You know, if I come to your house and I'm clearing my throat, and I'm not doing that on purpose this morning, but if I'm clearing my throat and kind of smacking my lips and all that, and you don't go get me something to drink or offer it or something, I might ask you about it. You know, Jesus said, "You didn't even offer me." What are you trying to say here? Are you trying to invite me here so you can chew me out? Tell me I'm wrong? I mean, is there a level of rejection here? What is it? I'd like to go to 1 Timothy now, take a little different look at it. 1 Timothy, the 5th chapter. And I'd like to read beginning verse 9. Paul speaking again here, but he's writing to Timothy. giving him advice and counsel about his future ministry and maybe current ministry. But he says here, beginning in verse 9, he says, "Let not a widow be taken into the number under 80 years old, having been the wife of one man, well reported of for good works, if she hath brought up children, if she hath lodged strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet, if she hath relieved the afflicted, if she hath diligently followed every good work. But the younger widows refuse, for when they have begun to wax wanton against Christ, they will marry." So I'm not going to get into marriage counseling here this morning, but I'd just like for us to realize that one of the stipulations for bringing in a widow into the under the oversight of the of a congregation to help them in their everyday needs, and they're taking on a responsibility as a congregation would kind of assume some of the responsibilities of being a husband to her. He says, one of the prerequisites is if she hath washed the saints' feet. Well, what would you think? Why would he make a statement like that, Paul? Do you think maybe it was because that it was a practice not just to offer the water for you to wash your own feet, but to actually wash the other saints' feet at the time that Paul lived? This is going a little beyond just the social thing, isn't it? This is going beyond what society would expect. You visit one another's house, maybe you walk 2 miles in the on a dusty road, or maybe 2 days. And when you get there, the customary thing was there's water in the pitcher over there if y'all'd like to wash your feet. That was a custom. But here, Paul says, one of the, where does she stand? Is she willing to be in subjection to the others? What was the verse that we read earlier there in Ephesians 5 and 21? It said, submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. Now, I don't feel like that we ought to start going around and washing everybody's feet when we get into the chapel. Every time we come here, that's not what I'm talking about. But I do feel like that I believe that there is a high level of importance for us to recognize the validity of practicing the ordinance of washing feet. All right? He says, don't take this widow in if she doesn't meet this. There's something outlying here. There was something outlying about the Pharisee that didn't even offer Jesus water to wash his feet. I don't know what it was. Was he saying, I'm better than you. I'm rejecting you. I don't know what it was saying. But it's saying something. And it's also saying something if a person has a reputation of subjecting themselves one to another. There's something that goes along with that. So now, let's turn to John, the 13th chapter. St. John, the 13th chapter. I would say all of those things because I want us to understand that what Jesus did at the Last Supper before the Passover was not like instituting a completely new function of society by washing feet, or at least providing water to wash feet. All right? But I hope we understand now that it means one thing to provide water to wash the feet. It means something totally different to wash someone else's feet. Because when I wash your feet, what I'm saying is I am putting myself in a place of subjection to you. I'm esteeming you higher than myself. That's what I'm saying. And it was not completely uncharacteristic in the Greco-Roman culture for a student to wash their teacher's feet. Didn't have to be a slave, but a student of a teacher. Philosophy, all those things. You know, there was philosophers, students. It was not way out of ordinary for the student to wash the teacher's feet. But notice what happened here in the 13th chapter of John. Begin reading in the 5th verse. Maybe 4th verse. 3rd verse, sorry. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and all that he was come, and that he was come from God and went to God, he rises from supper and laid aside his garments and took a towel and girded himself. Just make note here that it appears that Jesus arose during the time that they were still eating and discoursing. It wasn't like just before they left the house. But there was still an interaction between them all here. He says he rises from supper, and after he had poured water into a basin, he began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel wherewith he was girded. Then cometh he to Simon Peter, and Peter said unto him, Lord, dost thou wash my feet? Lord. You see that? Lord. Do you wash my feet? There's something wrong here, Peter. Peter didn't always contemplate everything else. He wasn't the first one Jesus washed, because he'd already washed some of the others, or at least one other. And he come to Peter, and Peter immediately said, Lord, you're above. If anything, I ought to be washing your feet. You're the teacher, and I'm the student. He said, Lord, do you wash my feet? And Jesus said unto him, What I do thou knowest not now, but thou shalt know hereafter. Peter said unto him, Thou shalt never wash my feet. I think Peter was thinking, you know, we all walked in here. Somebody should have been washing Jesus' feet. We should have had water where we could at least wash our own feet. We've been eating. And we know by our customs that you don't sit down and eat together without washing your feet first. All right, that's just, you know, I hope at your house you don't sit down and eat without washing your hands first. And he said here, Thou shalt never wash my feet. There's something wrong here, Jesus. I'm sorry. I should have washed your feet already. That's what Peter, he's trying to sort this all out in his head. And Jesus answered him, If I wash thee not, thou hast no part with me. Simon Peter said to him, Lord, I don't know what's going on here. Peter, you know, he just focused on right here. What was right in front of his face was, we all got dirty feet. Jesus thinks we should have already done it. And he got up in the middle of supper, like he remembered something that needed to be done, and he's going around making sure everybody's got clean feet. I should have done that. That's my fault. That's what Peter's thinking. I'm putting words in his mouth. All right? And then when Jesus said, Peter, if you don't let me wash my feet, you don't have any part with me. Peter says, all right, Lord, I've missed it. I don't know what you're doing here, but if you need to wash my head, just do it. I want to be part of you. I don't want to be excluded. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be reckless with the scriptures. I want us to get the point here. For he says he knew, Jesus said, he that is washed needeth not save to wash his feet, but is clean every whit, and ye are clean, but not all. All right? So let's go down here, 12th verse. He says, so after he had washed their feet and taken his garments and was set down again, he said unto them, know ye not what I've done to you? I'm sure all the little chatter that might have been going on had completely stopped. And he said, do you know what I've done? You call me Master and Lord, and you say, well, for so I am. And Peter probably is still thinking, yes, Lord, I know. I should have been the one that should have washed your feet. But if I'd have washed your feet, then, you know, I'm not John's slave. He's not my teacher. Peter, he said, you know what I've done. I am your Lord and your Master. He said, if I then, your Lord and Master, have subjected myself to you, you ought to subject yourself one to another. Will you accept me saying it that way? If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I've given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. Verily, verily, I say unto you that the servant is not greater than the Lord, neither he that is sent greater than he that sent him. If you know these things, happy are ye if you do them. You know what brings happiness? Fellowship. You know what brings fellowship? lifting others up above you. Complimenting them on what they can do. Praising them for what they have done. Letting other people know you appreciate them. Doesn't that bring the best fellowship? Now, I guess you could have a form of fellowship if somebody come in and said, now listen here, I'm the big dog on the block, and as long as y'all do what I tell you, we're all going to get along and everything's going to be happy. Well, that's legislation. That's stopping at the red light. But it needs to be more than that. And when we take it on ourselves to lift up one another, and to serve one another. And I believe, it's not I think, I believe that foot washing is an important part of our experience. It's an important part that we should not fail to recognize and to accept. If I reject it, I'm rejecting something that Jesus said, I've given you an example that you should do as I have done. Of all those that have ever walked the face of the earth, Jesus should never have had to wash one foot. And yet he did. Jesus shouldn't have never had to have the obligation to wash a foot in his life. He was above all. He still is above all of us. But he got down and he washed all the disciples. I believe he washed Judas's feet. He put himself in a place of social subjection to every one of them. And then he said, if I, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, I'll give you an example, and you ought to wash one another's feet. Dear ones, when we wash one another's feet, it can be a tremendous blessing to our hearts, knowing that I can come to this place that I willingly, not because they're watching me, not because, you know, if I don't do this, they're going to look down on me. Because I want to, because I want to submit myself to my brother, to my sister, I want them to know that I love them, that I want them to be encouraged. Oh, when we build these kind of bonds, dear ones, it'll cause us to be strong and true. And that's where God can send the power down. I desire your prayers. I want to be faithful.